SD Files, the ultimate Chargers podcast.
Welcome aboard. With week three in the books, it's time to take a spin around the league and tackle the biggest stories with the coach, Brian Billick, joining us as he does every week to share his insight regarding what happened last weekend and what's to come this weekend. In this week's Rapid Fire Overtime segment, the one and only Sean Salisbury joins us with his Tell It Like It Is take on the NFL. But as always, we start with the big interview, so let's get to it.
The big interview.
As we check in with the Chargers, we check in with Eric Williams of ESPN San Diego. You can follow him at Eric_D_Williams. That's right. That's two underscores. So you know it's got to be good. Follow him on Twitter. Eric, we're looking at a Chargers team here that looked like they had a game on the road against the Colts, and they just couldn't quite seal the deal. The injuries are obviously really hampering the Chargers. It seems like they're so much closer to getting wins. What do they have to do to get over the hump?
Yeah, it's been an issue for the last couple of years for this team. They're 3-11 in games decided by 8 points or less dating back to last season. So in close games, they just need to figure out how to get over the hump. I asked Philip Rivers about that after last week's loss against the Colts, and he just basically said they have to win one so they know what it takes to win one, and then after that they can win another one and another one. So it takes kind of getting that first win to get over the hump. Obviously they need to make plays, you know, whether it's converting a third down so they can continue to chunk the clock and run the game out, or on the offensive side when they're playing from behind, you know, make a play to convert a third down so they can get in field scoring position and either get a field goal and touchdown to win the game. The only way you can get over the hump again is by doing it, and the Chargers just haven't been able to do that so far this season.
Keenan Allen out for the year. Danny Woodhead out for the year. Last week it looked like Melvin Gordon was finally going to bust out and maybe be able to save this team a little bit, and then they go to Indy, a team that, as we both know, does not have a very good defense and averages 2.2 on the ground in 16 carries, only 35 yards. Now, what are you seeing out of Gordon? We're still seeing some of the inconsistencies that I think the Chargers hoped would be maybe gone by now.
Well, I think the first 2 weeks he performed pretty well. As you mentioned, it looked like he had kind of snapped out of it. I know he feels more comfortable in the offense than he did as a rookie, and I think because of that he's more decisive and where he's going to run the football. Last week, I don't think the offensive line did a great job of opening up holes for him. And again, he was getting caught behind the line of scrimmage and didn't have any clear running lane. So I think that's the issue, along with the fact that they have to just give him the ball 20 times and see if he can make a play happen and not go away from the running game if they have some struggles early on. I think that's what happened in the first game of the season against Kansas City. Melvin had some success early and then only touched the ball 6 times in the second half, even though the Chargers were up 21 points. You would think at that time they would have been grinding clock. He would have got more touches than he did. So I think the Chargers need to make him more of a focal point of the offense. And I know that's hard to do when you have a talented quarterback like Philip Rivers. But, you know, Rivers is getting up there in age. He's going to be 35 in December. I think kind of similar to what, you know, the Broncos did with Peyton Manning. As he got older, they started to kind of evolve the way they played, lean more on the running game and a talented defense. I think the Chargers need to do kind of the same thing here. Take some of the pressure and some of the load on carrying that offense from Philip Rivers and just really trust in their first-round draft pick in Gordon.
In basketball, we hear about volume shooters, a guy that needs to get a couple shots up and get a rhythm.
Yeah.
And you understand that's going to happen. It might be a little ugly, but if you want to get the performance out of him, you have to let him do it. There are volume runners in the NFL. Is Melvin Gordon maybe one of those guys?
I think he is one of those guys. I covered the Sonics the last season that they were in Seattle, and Kevin Durant, the rookie year, they basically let him shoot it as soon as he crossed half court because they knew the more he shot, the more comfortable he was going to get in terms of what he was effective in doing from an offensive standpoint. I think similar to Melvin Gordon, when you watched him in college at Wisconsin, the more he touched the ball, the more familiar he got with the way the defense was going to play him, and then the more chance you had for an explosive play. So I think if you give him 20 touches a game, he's going to create a couple of explosive plays just because of the talent level that he brings to the table. But the Chargers have only done that once since he's been here in 2 years, have allowed him to rush the ball 20 times. So I think they really need to make it, again, a point of emphasis to give him touches early and often so he can get comfortable.
Obviously, it is tempting to let Philip Rivers do his thing, in part because we've lost Keenan Allen. They've lost Danny Woodhead, as we mentioned.
Yep.
but they still have playmakers. Travis Benjamin looked terrific. Terrell Williams has stepped up in his absence and looked explosive as well. And yesterday you get Hunter Henry go ahead and get 5 catches for 76 yards. So there's a lot of talent still on the Chargers. So it is interesting that the coaching staff is going to have to fight their temptation to go for the big plays and actually realize that maybe grinding it out might be at times the best thing for both this team and for Philip Rivers specifically. Going forward, when you look at now they play a Saints team that is giving up almost 34 points a game, is this maybe the best opportunity to do that? Because the best way to beat the Saints is to keep Drew Brees off the field.
Yeah, you think so. Just play that time of possession game, control tempo, control the clock, and make Drew, you know, watch from the sidelines. And the way to do that is giving the ball to Melvin Gordon. But then you look at their pass defense, probably one of the worst in the league. There's going to be a lot of matchups that Philip is going to want to get to at the line of scrimmage, even though he doesn't have some of his playmakers like Keenan Allen and Woodhead, as you mentioned. Probably not Antonio Gates, who sat out last week with a hamstring injury. So, again, I think you're kind of fighting that urge, temptation to go with the mismatches that you have in the perimeter and just hand the ball off to Gordon, chunk the clock, you know, keep those sticks moving so you can keep, you know, Drew off of the field. And this is the first time Drew's going to be playing in San Diego since he left in free agency in 2005. So I think it'll be interesting to see what kind of response he gets from the crowd from Qualcomm Stadium.
When you look at the defense for the Chargers, I don't think it gets a lot of publicity, but they've been actually pretty serviceable. They haven't been elite. They're not the Panthers. They're not the Broncos. But they haven't been giving up a ton of points. They're kind of right in the middle in the AFC, but they have now also lost. Boy, we're just rolling off the injuries. Sorry, Chargers fans. Manti Te'o, what sort of impact does that make on their defense? Is there anyone that can step up and replace him?
Well, it's big because he's the defensive play caller and one of the leaders on that defense, a defensive co-captain along with Brandon Mebane. He was hoping for big things going into this year. He's in a contract year, and it's the guy that's been calling your defense for the last year. Now that Eric Weddle, you know, left in free agency to Baltimore. So now Denzel Perryman will kind of take over those play calling duties. And then a rookie, Jatavis Brown, will replace Te'o in the lineup. Now, Jatavis doesn't have as much experience as Manti does, but he's an explosive playmaker, 5'11", about 230 pounds, really good at blitzing and can get sideline to sideline, perhaps one of the best athletes that they have on that defense. So, again, there'll be some mistakes. You know, there'll be some pickups in the road in terms of Jatavis' play, but I don't know if there'll be a drop-off in terms of playmaking ability because of the speed and playmaking ability that he brings to the table as a rookie.
How quickly do the Chargers need to turn this around? Now, they're not buried. Denver's off to a 3-0 start, but nobody else has really taken off and run with it. If you go back and win this game against the Saints, they're 2-2, and then you start a string in the AFC West. You get the Raiders, you get the Broncos. You get the Broncos actually twice in a three-week span.
Mm-hmm.
The Chargers don't think they're out of this thing, and how do they go ahead and circle the wagons? They know they have the injuries. This is where Philip Rivers really steps up, and his leadership tends to shine, doesn't it?
Yeah, I don't think they're out of it, but you're right. This is an important stretch of the season, and if they don't win games here, they could be out of it at the end of it. This is a must-win game, I feel like. You know, you hate to say that this early in the season, but you get the Saints, who haven't won a game yet, at home. This is one you need to get because, as you mentioned, you go to Oakland, and you get Denver, the defending Super Bowl champs, at home. You have to go to Atlanta, and then you have to go to Denver. You know, so those are a tough stretch of games here. And you need to win the ones that you're supposed to win at home. So if they can get to 2-2 and then maybe sneak a win or two during this four-game stretch and be right around 500, I think they're fine. But if they get to the midpoint of the season and they're 2-6 and they have to kind of climb back into it, you know, during the back half of the season, I just feel like that's going to be tough with all the injuries that they're dealing with right now.
From ESPN San Diego, he is Eric Williams, your expert on the San Diego Chargers. Eric, thanks for coming and joining us today, sharing a little bit of insight about the Chargers and their challenges going forward.
Sure, no problem. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate it. Now, you can follow Eric and go do that anyway, at Eric_D_Williams. And we will be back in just a little bit, getting a little more insight from the coach, Brian Billick. Stay tuned.
Around the league.
And now to go around the NFL, we bring in the coach, Brian Billick, brought to you by SeatGeek. Visit SeatGeek.com or download the SeatGeek app. Make sure you and your family are getting the best deal on sports and concert tickets every time. Coach, an interesting week where the NFL starts to sort some things out here. It's only 3 weeks in, but it feels like we've learned a couple things about some teams. And then there's a few we found out we didn't learn anything at all. I want to start right off with the Cardinals and Bills, a game in which Rex Ryan's seat could not have been any hotter, was basically almost in flames. And then they go out and absolutely trounce the Cardinals in a game where, quite frankly, Carson Palmer, to me, looked for the first time like he maybe was getting a little bit old. What did you see from both those teams this week?
Yeah, I think it was a surprise. It was an opportunity for Arizona. And you can always talk about that going from the, you know, quasi-West Coast to East Coast. They were playing at basically 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock in the morning body time, which is always difficult. But in an opportunity, in an atmosphere, and as you said, we've all talked all week about the pressure that Rex Ryan and the Bills were under at home. Had it not started out not well, you kind of know the way that crowd would have gone. But the thing that jumped out at me was just how much more physical the Bills were on both sides of the ball. Arizona came into the season as a physical front seven. They wanted to be able to run the ball. We know the explosives they could have with Carson Palmer and Larry Fitzgerald in that group. And they just lack that physicalness, and that's something that's got to be a concern going forward.
So let's go over to the game that I thought it was early. It was the Thursday game, and a little bit stunning, really, that the Houston Texans, off to a good start, just looked completely hapless and hopeless in Foxborough. Jacoby Brissett, in his very first start, showed up and played pretty well. Looked like Bill Belichick managed to just scheme Brock Osweiler into oblivion. How much of this do you chalk up to a bad game by the Texans where you just kind of crumple it up and say, let's go on to next week? Or how many things did you see in that game that maybe concerned you about the Texans? And by the way, who are the Patriots going to play at quarterback next week?
Yeah, good question. You know, we all have this well-founded confidence in New England that any time they're at home, that's just a tough place to play. It's a tough place to play. And why are tough places to play? Because the team is good. Yeah, the crowd is a difference and can be loud noise and stuff like that. But they're tough at home because they're good. And you knew the game plan they wanted to have. Brissett was less than 20 passes, very efficient, didn't turn the ball over, converted on some third down with his legs, saw a whole bunch of blue air at blunt. They ran for 185 yards total on the night on close to 40 attempts. And you could see that Houston just couldn't get anything going. It seems like almost every three and out, which begs the question, okay, where does Houston go from here? Yeah, they're in a division that looks to be very winnable. But again, the challenge for Houston is, okay, can you progress through the playoffs? Have you shown any sign that your team, if in the playoffs, can go on the road, it can go into a Pittsburgh, go into a New England, and win? And they certainly didn't on Thursday night. Doesn't mean that they're not going to get better. And for New England, it's this faith in Bill Belichick is, maybe we don't even need a quarterback. Maybe we'll just direct snap to LeGarrette Blount, Julian Edelman. We're going to spot you. We're going to spot you know Tom Brady. We're going to spot you know Jimmy Garoppolo. We're going to spot you all these things. Really, it's kind of like the presidential debate. The low expectation coming into this next game, and this is going to be interesting with them playing the Buffalo Bills, because with the big win, the assumption is, and with no Tom Brady and no Garoppolo, and that they should just kill the Patriots coming off a really good win. If they don't, this is going to be interesting.
I guess that's a really good point, because I've talked about Rex Ryan a little bit, and we saw the Bills get the big win. Rex Ryan is already in full week taunting the Patriots on his Monday conversation, you know, kind of had a grumbly little Bill Belichick imitation. He's had a tendency of doing this before, and it's what makes him such an entertaining guy to cover in the NFL. But it also sometimes gets you in trouble, because you've run into situations with coaches, with players, with anybody who are sometimes writing checks with their mouth that they can't necessarily cash. If the Bills don't get this done against New England, does Rex Ryan stand the chance of basically undoing some of the good work that he did this week?
They could, but you've got to take that chance from the standpoint of, and knowing Rex as well as I do, and the time he was with me, if you corner Rex, this is exactly what you're going to get. It eventually wore out in New York. Why? Because eventually you've got to win. That's the only way to back it up. It's like any, and I hate to use the term bully because I'm not referring to him as a bully, But, you know, sometimes the best way to confront a bully is just punch him in the nose. And all of a sudden now he's no longer a bully. Well, you've got to follow it up with a win. And for them, now it's in Buffalo. And you know fans in Buffalo and everything, they've got that little bit of chip on their shoulder, and I think they love it, providing you win. But if you do that and you don't win, particularly under these circumstances, it was great to have a great win at Arizona at home. But if you're Buffalo and if you're Rex Ryan, and now you're playing the team that is obviously everybody's in the division's arch rival, a team that's won the last 8 division titles, and they don't have a Tom Brady, and they don't have Jimmy Garoppolo, and even where they had Brissett or whoever they have in there. If you can't win now in New England, then this creates we're right back to where we were square one last week, and where do you go from here?
Let's head over to the AFC where no Teddy Bridgewater, no Adrian Peterson, no Matt Khalil, no problem for the Vikings who go into Carolina and really play an impressive game, beating the Panthers 22-10, their second statement game of the year. Despite it seems that the pieces and parts are falling off the wagon, the Vikings have to be off to one of the more impressive and improbable starts of the season. When you see the way they've played in the last couple weeks, what's the ceiling for these guys?
Well, I don't think there is one, and you can fill it up in 3 things: defense, defense, defense. Sam Bradford's been great for them, and they'll find a little bit of a rhythm of a running game. But this defense is as good as I've seen, and I've got a little bit of a history with this. This is good, and it's a kind of a no-name defense, with no disrespect to the players. I mean, to most lay people, you're going to name someone on the Minnesota Vikings defense, and they might come up with Anthony Barr, but outside of that, you don't. Now, still, that's a talented defense. They have 8 starters that were our former first or second-round draft choice. So this is a talented defense. Mike Zimmer's brilliant. They don't do a lot. They're not a complex defense, but they're fundamentally sound in what they do. They know how to attack you. They're great open field tacklers. This defense is as advertised, and this is a team with a quarterback that should be able to manage what they need to do to complement this defense that is very much the team to beat in the NFC right now, along with the Philadelphia Eagles.
When I look at the Vikings, what I see is a comparison to last year's Denver Broncos in a lot of ways, a team that, again, very talented defense, not all that tricky. There's not any sort of gimmicks or anything you have to overcome. But it seems to me like this is maybe, to an extent, a poor man's Denver Broncos from last year with an offense that maybe has an opportunity to match that or even exceed the Broncos, and they managed to go the whole way. So when you look at the Vikings, that's a pretty fascinating story. We'll see where that goes. But as for the Panthers, they lost 1 regular season game last year. They've already lost 2. From the macro level, what seems to be off?
Well, and that's a pretty lofty bar, you know, to when
right.
2 games. And so, oh, my God, you doubled your roster from last year. Well, wait a minute now. That's pretty tough sledding. I think what we saw in Carolina, everybody talks about the Super Bowl hangover. I don't know that I believe in that, although the numbers might indicate that. But when you play Carolina, the key is you got to get Cam Newton to throw the ball 35 times or more. Now, you could say that about a lot of teams, but Cam Newton's numbers, his productivity, falls off precipitously when he has to throw the ball 35 times or more. His 2.5 touchdowns to interception ratio drops to 1-to-1. His completion percentage drops down. I think he's 7-16, something like that, in games that he throws the ball more than 35 times. And so that's exactly what happened in this game. I think he threw it exactly 35 times. And they couldn't get the running game going. Again, let's go back to the defense, the turnovers that they created, the short field they were able to put that offense on. So I think this was more of less of an indictment of Carolina than it was noteworthy of what Minnesota could do on the road in Carolina.
Well, let's go to another team that's struggling after their loss last night in Monday Night Football. The Saints are 0-3. They're 0-2 at home, which is even more disturbing. Where does this team have to get better, and how much time do they have left in which to do it?
Well, it keeps coming back to the same formula. This is a team whose defense is bad in biblical proportions. I mean, I've been saying all week long that the biggest concern I had going in, and this is a perfect example. You look at the game. Drew Brees feels like, if I don't score 30 points, and last night 30 was not enough, but if we don't score 30 points, we're going to lose. When he gets in that mode, 2 years ago in 2014, he threw 17 interceptions. Why? Because they were next to last in the league in defense. 2 years before that, 2012, he threw 19 interceptions. And that's not Drew Brees. Why? Because they were last in the league in defense. They've got to go out and you know, if we don't score 30 points, we're going to lose. And that puts Drew Brees in a situation where he has to maybe make some throws or do some things that he wouldn't normally do in a more equitable situation. Even though Drew Brees had a brilliant night, Matt Ryan, who now the last two games has looked more like the Matt Ryan of old in terms, you know, had a very equitable night in what he did. And I just think the defense that New Orleans is spotting team and what Drew Brees has to do to overcome that. I mean, throwing the ball 54 times, I don't care who you are, it's just not a good thing.
Well, we'll wrap up with one of the faces of the league here. Last week, there were questions surrounding Aaron Rodgers, questions surrounding the Packers. You know, is something really wrong? Packers come out, Aaron Rodgers throws four touchdowns in the first half and does it effortlessly. For the Packers now, they got Eddie Lacy had his first ever 100-yard rushing game in September. Rodgers looks right again. Jordy Nelson is healthy. Was this just maybe the start of something special for the Packers this week against the Lions?
Well, and I think you just pointed out the keys for them, their ability to run the ball. In the previous games, they didn't have that kind of rhythm. They need to have that running game as a balance. The unique thing about the Green Bay Packers is the receiving core, like their entire team. It's homegrown. It's always has been. When you had Donald Driver and Greg Jennings and in the heyday of their Super Bowl, and then a young Jordy Nelson. And I thought Jordy Nelson, when he got hurt last year, was great opportunity for the other receivers to get into that rhythm, you know, with now Devontae Adams and then Randall Cobb and Rodgers, the tight end, to really, you know, develop that rapport with Aaron Rodgers. And then now when you had Jordy Nelson back, boy, you're off and running. And early on, we didn't see that. We saw a bit of that last night, or on Sunday. Now, what we also saw was the defense that kind of let Detroit back in the door a little bit. So that's still my biggest concern for them. But offensively, it's hard to look at Green Bay and not feel like they may not lead the league in offense that we're used to seeing in these mega games, but they've got some balance and a plan. I like it when they come out of the no huddle, when they have a little more orchestrated offense. I think that suits them a little bit better. So they obviously have got to feel very good about where they are. But they're also in a division now facing a team that we just talked about, the Minnesota Vikings, that are pretty darn good.
He is the coach. This is Brian Billick, and we tell you every week, when you listen to him, you become a smarter football fan. Thanks for your time, Coach. We'll catch you next week.
Sounds good.
Remember to visit SeatGeek.com or download the SeatGeek app. They present the coach, and make sure your family gets getting the best deal on sports and concert tickets every time. So visit SeatGeek.com. Next up, we're going to overtime.
Overtime.
It is overtime, and joining us today, the inimitable Sean Salisbury. You know him from SB Nation Radio. Hey, I also know a guy from there. That's me. And you can find him at Sean Unfiltered on Twitter. I highly suggest, if you're not doing that, you should do that already. Sean, how are you doing today?
Oh,
hey, no problem at all. So we have a six-pack of questions ready for overtime. Let's start right here. Trevor Siemian had 312 yards, four touchdowns in Cincinnati, his very first road start for the Denver Broncos. Judging at the quarterbacking they had last year, is he a better option right now than Peyton Manning or Brock Osweiler was in 2015?
You know, better option, here's the difference. You had Brock, who was more physical than Peyton, and Peyton at the time, you know, when the change was made, and Peyton, who is the smartest quarterback we've ever had, and then the most – the best at manipulating a game plan or a defense that we've ever seen. So, and cerebral. So you had a combination of both, but I think this kid's got both. Now, I don't want to go overboard and say after three starts, he's better than Brock, but Brock only had six starts. So physically, and the ability, the things that he's showing, especially last week on the road, are pretty impressive. I'm not ready to go there yet, just right now after three games, because what Peyton did was keep you out of bad plays for the most part as well. So I think that combination's better still, but I'm impressed with this kid. The quantum leaps he's made from week one to week, you know, now heading into week four, I give him a lot of credit. And I'm actually excited and proud of him. It's fun to watch, but I'll still stick with the two-headed guys from last year because of their experience.
Let's move on to a two-headed guy that's turned out by a necessity up in New England. Jimmy Garoppolo, Jacoby Brissett. Don't know which one's going to play, if either. Maybe it's even Julian Edelman. But does it matter? Is this team going to hand Tom Brady a bright, shiny 4-0 record upon his return from suspension?
Yeah, I think so, especially since they have this game at home again. Now, you know it's, you know that they're going to try to pressure either guy. But the key, if you're going to blitz a young quarterback, you're probably playing into their hands, because then they don't have to go through the whole process of reading it out. They can just pick one receiver and bet the best matchup and throw it. So that's the problem. The key is play them zone and make it go through their progressions. But I'm not sure it matters, although obviously Garoppolo gives you not only the feet and the arm. I think you're a little more limited with Jacoby Brissett. That being said, we've never had a coach in the history of this game who's a better in-game adjuster and better game planner then Bill Belichick. Doesn't matter who they play. I do believe they're going to be 4-0, especially since this game's at home. I think Garoppolo's actually going to play, which is an advantage for New England. And Tom Brady comes back, and Cleveland is his first start, and they will be 5-0 after that one.
Jared Goff, the first pick in the draft, hasn't seen the field yet. No idea when he will. Are the Rams being too cautious with him, judging by the success of all these other young signal callers this season?
I believe so. Now Case Keenum's a serviceable starter and a pretty solid backup and carved a niche in the league, but they've got a really good defense. And at some point, this just tells you how far behind the Wentzes and Dak Prescott that Goff is coming from his system. It just does. So, and Jeff Fisher is always leery. He's done it with players before about putting young guys in, but as long as they keep winning, he's going to be able to buy time without from the fans without having to start Jared Goff. But it just shows you terminology and how difficult it is to come from that system, an air raid system, and apply it to NFL, you know, the mechanics of getting under center. So they're going to stick with this as long as they possibly can, unless they lose three or four in a row. But Goff's, I didn't think Goff should have been the first pick of the draft. I think he'll be fine. But I liked Wentz. I actually like Prescott even better as well, and Paxton Lynch. So we'll see in the long run. But this is probably the best thing, because he came out of camp not ready to play, and Case Keenum's getting him by.
Over in Green Bay, Eddie Lacy notched his first ever 100-yard outing in September, as hard as that is to believe. Notoriously slow starter, but we talked about the weight loss. Is this the year that he finally blossoms into one of the league's great running backs?
He's going to have to, and I think as long as he stays focused on making sure his body's right and can stay healthy, yeah. And it is hard to fathom that guy's first September 100-yard rushing game this early in the season. It is hard to believe, but as long as Rodgers stays upright and they stay in rhythm, they're a difficult team to beat in the NFC. And I'm going to tell you the key for them, not only is protecting Rodgers, but it'll make it even easier on Aaron Rodgers and everybody else if Eddie Lacy stays healthy and can average a 22 to 30 carries or touch of the game. So, yeah, I think this is a monster step for him. And in a league that we're kind of deficient of top flight, first, you know, upper echelon, Todd Gurley, Le'Veon Bell type backs, I think Eddie Lacy can be one of them, as long as the commitment to watching out for his body and taking care of it's there, because he'll get his touches, especially if the season rolls on in a cold-weather Green Bay.
Sean, after the Saints' blowout loss on Monday night, Drew Brees talked about that game and said he thinks things will turn around for the Saints. How do they turn around when they're giving up 30-something points a game, and is it too late already?
Yeah, they're not. It's not turning around. That's because Superman, meaning Drew Brees, is so optimistic and has had to carry a franchise. Can you imagine how bad they'd be without him? I mean, good gracious. He has to hang 35 or 40 a week to keep them in a game. They're the notoriously bad defense, and maybe that has something to do with the fact that their offense, you know, scores a lot of points and plays fast and throws the football. But that's in it, you know, a lot of teams do that. So that's a bad excuse. They've got a lot of injuries on defense, but they haven't drafted well either. They're underachievers. It's a bad defense. Sometimes you just got to recognize that your personnel is not as good as the other guys, and it's impossible to ask a quarterback to throw 35 and 40 points a game on you and to throw for 5,000 yards a season and 45 touchdowns. Brees is phenomenal. He is the franchise. But it's not going to change. That team is going to battle for, you know, they'll be lucky to win six or seven games. And if they do, it'll be because of him. It's not changing, though. The culture of that team is offense, bad defensive personnel, and it doesn't matter who the coordinator is, Rob Ryan, Dennis Allen. They're just not, whether they're not committed to it or whether they don't understand how to play it. Bottom line is the New Orleans Saints will always, well, at least for now, until the defense gets better, doesn't matter how good the offense is, they'll always be chasing people.
Now for the final question of our six-pack, we go to the Pacific Northwest. Russell Wilson is battling injuries to both his legs. Now, obviously, you want your line to protect you better, but at this point, is Russell Wilson now responsible for finding a way to better protect himself?
Yeah, he is. But he's really, you know, when he is he's taking some hits, and that offensive line is not good, and he had to overcome that last year and really took another step in his game. But they've got to make a commitment to that position. That's number one. But now we know from the ankle to now the knee, where is he going to be? But, you know, and after this, they have the bye week, so getting ready to play the Jets. Do you rest him and say with Arizona's 1-2 starts, St. Louis, I mean, or the Los Angeles Rams don't have a great offense, should we rest him? I think if he's 85% or more, you play him. But he is really good at finding pockets to slide in. So I give him a lot of credit. The problem is, taking hits in the pocket, you can't defend, and if you can't get out of bounds and it's 3rd and 3 and you got to dive for a first down, you're going to put yourself in a bind. But he is a great player, a great playmaker, but also one of the smartest running / passing quarterbacks we have in this league. But they have to keep him healthy, because we saw them finally break out offensively without Russell Wilson. That team will have to do what Denver's doing for the most part and win on offense. But Russell Wilson, if he's close to being healthy, they'll play him.
That is Sean Salisbury spitting the truth over at SB Nation Radio, and especially on his Twitter feed. Make sure you're following that at Sean Unfiltered. Thanks so much for your time today, Sean. Really appreciate it.
Honored to be on. I really appreciate you guys having me. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, that's a wrap for now, but be sure to check all the archives posted over at audioboom.com. Search for NFL Files and check out all the podcasts for every team in the league, because we cover them all. My name's Sean Drotar, and you can follow me on Twitter at sdrotar. That's S-D-R-O-T-A-R, and I will catch you next week.
This has been a Sports Show production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsshow.com.